No, guys, honestly, please continue debating the reason for our increase in Facebook activity between whether it's Dave's good content or Ezzy inviting a lot of people to like Illegal Curve on Facebook.
Well,
the audience is going to be riveted by this conversation.
Well, Drew, what we can point out is that you had no impact on whether it got any our social media increase or decrease.
Yeah, Drew's too busy parenting.
Yes, I'm too busy parenting. You guys are too busy contenting and inviting, as the case, if you're really
fine. You know, one has to create and the other has to share.
Yeah. Is Aaron walking now?
Aaron is cruising, I would say, on the furniture, which
like
is
cruising in a convertible.
No, cruising is a parenting term when a child can't really stand up on their own, but they pull themselves up on the furniture and hold themselves up on the furniture and then move from the couch to the
That's
chair.
Called cruising.
That's called cruising.
So the last segment we got baby Bjorns, and now we got cruising. Your mama.
I'm going to educate you two, because I mean, I assume that many in our audience actually know about this, but you two are amateurs when it comes to the parenting side of things. So I'm here to
educate
you.
Not just about parenting, but go on.
Yeah, lots of things you guys are amateurs about, but we'll just leave it at parenting for now. We're working on getting Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News on the program. There's a possibility that Dan Bylsma might be speaking right now as the Sabres and the Florida Panthers will do battle a little bit later this afternoon.
You know, we mentioned Evander Kane, who's only played one game for the Sabres this year.
Like one period, I think, before he cracked those ribs.
You know, good thing for our old friend Evander, because it looks like those charges were dropped against him. So it looks like, you know, that's not going to go through. But, you know, certainly, you know, we talked about missing Jack Eichel. Evander Kane is another guy, though, guys, that they expected to be in their top six this season. And, you know, he hasn't been out there. And that just shows you the lack of depth that this team has. So right now, the Buffalo Sabres, you know, with all of the young draft picks that they have either in the lineup or coming into the lineup within the next couple of years here, you know, certainly this year, it looks like it's going to be a long year for this team. And, you know, Sabres fans are going to have to wait a little while before this team starts winning the majority of their games.
Well, it's still early in the year, but they're probably a little bit concerned about the performance of Sam Reinhart, still looking for his first goal in the season after getting 23 goals last season. Second overall pick back in 2014. So the Sabres have been hoping for more from Sam Reinhart thus far. He hasn't been able to quite get that going this early part of the season for them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, you have a guy like Alex Nylander, who was drafted early last year. He's a guy that's got loads of talent. I saw him play at the World Under-18 Hockey Championships in Grand Forks. So, I mean, the future looks extremely bright with the Buffalo Sabres. But right now, you know, Drew, we talked about it. Right now, they're having their struggles.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Mike Harrington. You've read Mike's work on the Buffalo News. He, of course, covers the Buffalo Sabres. Mike, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's a bright, sunny, warm morning in Buffalo, except it's not very warm with the way things are going on the ice right now.
Noah, some early season struggles for the Buffalo Sabres, 1-3-2 through their first six games. Let's start with the injury bug, because that hit the Sabres so very hard right at the start of the year. Jack Eichel gets his ankle rolled up on right before the season begins. Evander Kane goes hard into the boards in the first game, or, you know, if it was the first period or the second period, I can't remember. You know, those two losses, are they, you know, primarily responsible for the slow start the Sabres have had this season?
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the numbers. I mean, the Sabres have 8 even strength goals in their 6 games so far. But even more than just the numbers, it's what Eichel and Kane bring. Eichel obviously is the threat that every other team has to prepare for, and he can create so many plays. And Evander Kane, you know, for all his failings off the ice, on the ice, drives a lot of possession, and he is the power forward the Sabres don't have right now. He got injured on a play where he just got a little nudge from Alexi Emelin, and he was close to the boards on an icing play, and he just went in. It was almost like a car wreck, the noise he hit on the end boards. He has 4 broken ribs, so he's 2 or 3 weeks away at least from coming back. But that's 2 scoring threats, 2 top-line threats, 2 power play threats, 2 threats when they play 3-on-3 overtime, all of which are gone and all of which are clearly missing from this lineup right now.
Now, Mike, as you know, Kyle Okposo was the big free agent acquisition for the Buffalo Sabres. How would you rate his play thus far this season?
You know, he's been a little up and down. He had a really good debut out in Edmonton. He missed the first game with a knee injury. Was really good out in Edmonton, scored a goal 2 minutes into the game. You know, but think about it, guys. They have 14 goals in their six games. Six of them were that game in Edmonton. What's the biggest aberration in league right now? The 7-1 Edmonton Oilers only loss is against the 1-3-2 Buffalo Sabres. You know, Okposo needs to be better. Ryan O'Reilly needs to be better. Sam Reinhart has no goals. In the absence of Eichel and Kane, your top six guys who are remaining need to be better. And to this point, most of them have not been very good.
Mike, the Sabres haven't made the playoffs since 2010-11. How prepared is this fan base to wait any longer for this team to start making a playoff push?
It's getting very surly around here is the best word I can use. People didn't expect them necessarily to be in the playoffs this year. People expected them to be in the playoff hunt, to be pushing that 90 to 95 point range to compete for a playoff spot. And right now, you know, they need to get these guys back, and that's not happening anytime soon. Eichel's probably going to miss 20 games. Evander Kane is probably going to miss 20 games. They have a packed schedule with, I think it's 12 games coming up in the first 18 days of November. So they have a serious issue here. If they fall out of this race quickly, it's the old adage, you don't necessarily win a playoff spot in October or November, but you can certainly lose one early on. And they're in real trouble here. They're falling off the pace already in the division. And, you know, they're 29th in the league. They're the only team in the league with one win so far.
Mike Harrington is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Mike, moving to the back end, Rasmus Ristolainen, we know that they finally got him signed to the six-year contract extension. He's going to earn $5.4 million as a salary cap hit from now through 2022. Is he underappreciated for his performance and for his skill set throughout the NHL?
You know, he's an interesting guy because the analytics community will tell you that he's not worth a long-term deal yet. He's not at that point in his career. And the numbers sort of back that up, but the other variable to that is who he's playing with. You know, Josh Georges has not really been a great partner for him. Georges had a terrific game at Edmonton shutting down Connor McDavid. He's been up and down a little. When they brought Dmitry Kulikov in, they made the trade from Florida. The expectation was he was going to be Ristolainen's partner. Kulikov got hurt here in the preseason. He wasn't here because he was at the World Cup. So they haven't paired him with Ristolainen yet. I would think at some point that's coming sooner rather than later. I think that would elevate Ristolainen's game even more. But Ristolainen's setting up some plays, and he's getting that 25 minutes a night. Here's what I say, guys. Ristolainen is Buffalo's number one defenseman. He's not yet a number one defenseman in the true sense of the word in the NHL, but he will be pretty soon.
Now, Mike, we haven't even talked about Robin Lehner yet. We've talked about the Jack Eichel and Evander Kane injuries. It looks like he's going to come back very soon here. When it comes to Robin Lehner, though, we know that he missed the World Cup and he's had previous problems with that ankle. Do you still think that he is the long-term solution and goal here?
We don't know. I mean, we're going to find that out this year. I mean, he's been out now with the flu. He's supposed to return tomorrow and play against the Jets in Winnipeg. You know, he has to be the number one solution long-term and goal here, or Tim Murray is really out on a limb. Tim Murray traded a number one draft pick to get Robin Lehner. Robin Lehner's never played 50 games in a season in his career, and they need him to play well this year and do it for 55 to 60 games, or that's a real pox on the resume of Tim Murray for trading a number one pick. But, you know, they have a good prospect goalie in Cal Peterson at Notre Dame, but goaltenders take a long while to develop. They need Robin Lehner to be their guy, and they need it to happen this year.
Mike Harrington, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Mike, last season, Sam Reinhart had his coming out party, 23 goals, 42 points, a very impressive NHL rookie season. So far this year, struggling, no goals, two assists in the first six games for the Sabres. You know, why the struggles for Reinhart to start the year, and do you see any signs of him beginning to turn it around sooner rather than later?
Well, you know, they had him really flourishing the second half of last year, playing right wing with Eichel. You know, and I know he was a natural center. He was drafted number two overall as a center, but that was really some tremendous chemistry there. And I think he's really suffered the most from Eichel's injury because there was no one really to get him the puck. He didn't really sync very well with Ryan O'Reilly. And so they've moved Reinhart back to center now. They're trying to see if they can get him the puck more, get him a little more into the activity down the middle here in Eichel's absence. Bylsma said long-term he does see Reinhart as a winger on Eichel's wing, but that's not going to happen for a while. And you're right, if you're going to look at guys who are struggling here or causing some of the problem, Sam Reinhart can't be goalless through six games, and he is, and that's a big factor. And he's been very poor with the puck in his own end in Vancouver, a couple terrible giveaways, a bad penalty at the end of the game in Philadelphia. So it's been a hard sophomore year, so to speak, so far for Sam Reinhart.
You know, Mike, it's been over a year and a half since that blockbuster trade between the Winnipeg Jets and Buffalo Sabres that saw Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian traded to the Buffalo Sabres for Tyler Myers, Drew Stafford, Joel Armia, first-round pick, and Brandon Lemieux. And when you look at what's happening in Winnipeg now, Joel Armia is really starting to establish himself as a top-nine forward. You have Brandon Lemieux playing very well for the Manitoba Moose of the American Hockey League. Tyler Myers playing big-time minutes for the Winnipeg Jets. And then you look at Zach Bogosian. He's got no points in six games. Evander Kane certainly hasn't worked out like the Buffalo Sabres wanted him to work out. We know how the trade is viewed in Winnipeg, but in Buffalo, how do Sabres fans view that trade a year and a half after?
Oh, I don't need a year and a half. The day it was made, I wrote a column. I hated the trade. They made a deal. They acquired Kane and Bogosian for and that's what I wrote. How many ands were the Sabres going to give up in that deal? I think that was a deal that could not have worked for the Sabres unless Evander Kane came here and became a 35 or 40 goal scorer. You know, I didn't like Tyler Myers for Bogosian. Drew Stafford, they were going to deal anyway. Armia, frankly, showed nothing in this organization. You know, if he's starting to play well in Winnipeg, I saw some highlights also. He never showed anything here, so that was whatever. But I didn't like trading a first-round pick. I didn't like trading Brandon Lemieux, even though the rumor was he wasn't signing with Buffalo at any point. They gave up far too much. Most of the fans think they gave up far too much. Evander Kane's behavior here has really heightened that feeling. That's a trade that everyone in Buffalo pretty much thinks the Sabres got fleeced.
Mike Harrington, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Buffalo Sabres. The Sabres and the Jets do battle tomorrow afternoon at the MTS Center here in Winnipeg. Mike, Zemgus Girgensons, he was drafted first in the first round back in 2012 by the Sabres, finished his entry-level contract. He's now on to his second contract. He's topped out at 30 points, and that was a couple years ago. It seems like the Sabres mishandled him since he was drafted. Is that a fair assessment? And then what is Zemgus Girgensons now going to be as an NHL player?
Well, I don't know if they mishandled him as much as, you know, he hasn't established and they haven't decided what position. Is he a center or a winger? You know, he tended to thrive in Ted Nolan's system. He knew Nolan well. He played for him in Latvia in the Olympics. But Ted Nolan's system was just go out and work hard. That's not really a system. You know, Dan Bylsma is an NHL coach with a system, and I think Girgensons and Tyler Ennis have both struggled with that system. But, you know, I think there's something Ted Nolan often said, you know, when everyone is saying the Sabres have this huge trunk full of prospects, you know, Ted Nolan used to say, you know, all those prospects sometimes become suspects. And that's what we've seen a little with some of their AHL players, including Joel Armia when he was here. That's what we're seeing now with Zemgus Girgensons, a former number one pick, who got to the end of his entry-level deal and basically only got a one-year qualifying offer with a little raise. You know, they have to see some of these guys in their second, third, fourth year in the league elevate their games, and they haven't seen that yet. And Girgensons is a guy you certainly point to, a former number one pick, you know, struggling to establish anything on the second or third line here in terms of offense, and it's a big problem. There's so many guys up and down this line of fellas that you could point to. What's up with him? What's up with him? What's up with him? And it all adds up to, you know, a terrible start.
Mike, we've got one last question for you here. We wanted to ask you about the 2018 World Junior Hockey Championships that are coming up in Buffalo. They announced yesterday that there's going to be an outdoor game between Canada and the U.S. at New Era Stadium. The rest of the games are going to be played at newly named Keybag Center that used to be called First Niagara Center. What's the vibe like in Buffalo? How are ticket sales going? How is this being received? You know, it's over a year away, but what's the vibe like in Buffalo? What's the anticipation like for the World Junior Tournament coming up in 2018?
You know, it's one of those things that they just announced the ticket packages yesterday. Most of the tickets were sold in 2011 to fans of Team Canada. The atmosphere was sensational. They have a lot more downtown development now than they did 7 years ago. It'll be terrific there. They're just starting the packages now. We'll see how they sell. You know, they include the outdoor game. They're expecting 70,000 people at the outdoor game, U.S. and Canada, on December 29th, 2017. And, you know, this is Tim Murray obviously says, the GM, this is almost like the eighth Canadian market. And you remember how Team Canada was supported here in 2011. That'll happen again. It's a terrific place for the World Juniors. And there'll be no problem with filling the building most nights for most of these games.
Yeah, the fans just have to stay away from bottoms up, right?
There are places to go and places to stay, but I'm not going to get into any establishments that have earned some dubious notoriety in recent months.
Mike Arrington covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Mike, appreciate your time. Best of luck coming to Winnipeg. We'll see you tomorrow afternoon.
All right, gentlemen. Take care. Thank you.
Take care, Mike. Let's head to break. When we come back, we look at the Jets and the Capitals. The home and home starts on Tuesday night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
For Backstrom, the return to Marcus. Backside Ovechkin score! Brilliant passing. Ovechkin stays red hot. Shank and Alex Ovechkin shut anymore. That is just a wicked dart.
Jets hope that they can minimize the effect of Alex Ovechkin as they head for a home-and-home series starting Tuesday night here in Winnipeg between the Jets and the Capitals, 10 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com or check them out at their new location, 982 Portage Avenue, the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them the boys from Illegal Curve sent you.
Yeah, what did you think of those Colorado Avalanche Stadium Series jerseys last night?
Is that what were those their Stadium Series jerseys? It didn't do anything for me. Nothing about the Colorado Avalanche organization, unfortunately, does anything for me. They're just sort of a, you know, they've been a nondescript organization for much of the last decade, I would suggest. And that's a shame because you can sort of see how it's Denver is a good hockey market when the team is winning. They haven't been winning for a long time now, so you can sort of see some struggles with that organization. They're just one of the more anonymous organizations, I think, in the NHL, which is sort of surprising given that they're, of course, a Jets division rival. Every time the Jets and the Avs play, you're like, oh yeah, that's a division game. I sort of forgot about that.
Yeah, that's true. They do feel, it doesn't necessarily feel the same as when you're playing a Nashville, a Chicago, a Minnesota. You're right. There isn't that same sort of divisional rivalry as when you play Colorado. Maybe it's they're in the mountains, the Rockies. We forget about it. You know, we're a prairie town. But I actually kind of like the jerseys. I like those uniforms. I like the anytime you throw back to the old the Colorado Rocky days.
Sure, of course.
You know, I'm a big fan of those. The Lanny McDonald era.
Chico Resch.
I'm actually curious, and we haven't heard anything. If there's going to be, or if we have and I missed it, it's possible. If there's any divisional realignment with Las Vegas coming into the NHL.
I haven't heard anything yet.
Yeah, I was trying to think back if I'd heard anything.
I mean, assume they'd go into the Pacific.
I would assume that too, but I wonder if there's going to be any further, juggling in it besides that. Maybe they, maybe some of the Canadian teams join the Jets in the Central Division, and maybe the Dallas Stars, who are down all the way down south, move to the Pacific Division. I mean, I don't know the time change, or Colorado with the Mountain Time Zone.
Right.
I haven't heard anything, so it's just another one of those things with regard to expansion that's sort of still a little bit up in the air, which I'm sort of surprised, but not really.
Well, no, it's
NHL does business.
It may have not just been released. I mean, I suspect they must have a plan in place.
It's
just...
but I mean, you would think they get the rules down pat by now for this upcoming, and we'll talk about the new rule about Pierre LeBrun spoke to this week about the Las Vegas franchise having this window to sign UFAs and RFAs before the expansion draft.
I don't have a problem with that.
We'll talk about it. I don't have a problem with it either. But why aren't the rules confirmed yet?
Well, again, they may not release it, but I suspect they have, this is a billion-dollar enterprise. I suspect they have everything in place.
You would hope so. Who knows? I'm not. It'll be interesting to find out at the very least. The Jets and the Capitals twice next week. Former Southeast Division rivals meet again, both at MTS Center and then at the Verizon Center in Washington. The Caps are, they're going to be a Stanley Cup contender. They're off to a bit of a slow start or an average start, 3-2-1 through the first six games. But this is going to be a significant test, particularly the game in Washington, where the Jets are not going to get last change and the Capitals are going to be able to get their choice of matchup, offense versus defense. And I think that's going to be a very difficult challenge for the Jets to handle given their struggles with the third pairing on the back end.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, Drew. I mean, the Washington Capitals coming off of a 120-point season. You mentioned it's a bit of a slow start. It's not just a bit of a slow start. It's a slow start, Drew. And if you look at the Eastern Conference, the Washington Capitals have scored the fewest goals in the Eastern Conference along with the Buffalo Sabres. And the Washington Capitals don't have any excuses. I mean, at least Buffalo can say, we don't have Jack Eichel, we don't have Evander Kane. That's 60 goals in our lineup right there, potentially, that we're missing. But when you're talking about the Washington Capitals, you have a lot of players right now that just aren't putting the puck in the net. I mean, Alexander Ovechkin has 4 goals in 6 games, and, you know, he's probably going to get 50 goals, you know, at the end of the season like he always does. But there are a lot of guys on this team right now that are not scoring, and that's a big problem. The power play is second last in the NHL early on this season. The penalty kill is also bottom five in the league. So Barry Trotz and the Washington Capitals have a bunch of problems right now, and I realize that, you know, it's still early and you don't want to get too excited after 7 or 8 games here, but this Capitals team had the second best offense in the NHL last year.
I know, but here's why it's not a problem. It is a problem in that, and you're right in that they're not scoring a lot of goals, but even not scoring a lot of goals, they're 3-2-1. So the Buffalo Sabres, who've scored the same number of goals, are, what do you say, 1-3-2 through the first 6 games, whereas the Capitals are 3-2-1. So the Washington Capitals team, they don't need to be a juggernaut in October and November. And we saw it last year, is that when push comes to shove and they needed to be the best team in the NHL, they weren't able to turn it on in April and May when they lost to the Pittsburgh Penguins. So are you concerned about the Capitals?
Well, I'm a little bit concerned just because this is, as far as I'm concerned, one of the best offenses still in the NHL. And like we talked about, you're not worried about guys like Alexander Ovechkin or Nicholas Backstrom, your top players. Backstrom, by the way, hasn't scored yet.
Yeah.
But you're more worried about those secondary guys, guys like Justin Williams, who's only got 1 goal in 6 games. Lars Eller, who they traded 2 draft picks for, he's only got 1 goal in 6 games. So to me, you're a little bit concerned here. But yeah, certainly, you know, 6 games is 6 games, right? If we're talking about the first 20 games and the Capitals are still not putting the puck in the net, then we're a lot more worried about it. But certainly you just don't expect that. That's the only thing, especially the power play. They've had such a good power play over the years that it's a little bit puzzling after 6 games that they're second last in the NHL. You know, just putting it out there, they lost to the Oilers their last game. They play the Vancouver Canucks tonight. The Vancouver Canucks have surprised me as far as their start goes, because I didn't have the Vancouver Canucks as a playoff team this year. So certainly, you know, the Washington Capitals, they've still won 3 of the first 6 games. But just putting it out there, you don't ever expect the Capitals to be struggling scoring goals, right? Buffalo, you might say, okay, you know, they're not going to score as many goals as the top teams, but Washington, you just always expect them to be up there. That's all I'm saying.
You're right about that. I can't quibble with anything you said, in that it is surprising to see the, you know, because for everything we've always considered about the Washington Capitals, you think offense first and sort of defense second. But, you know, to you're absolutely right that their struggles offensively are a little bit of a surprise. I wouldn't be pushing any sort of panic button or anything. I'm not saying you're saying that you need to. 3-2-1. Through the first 6 games is a team that's going to slowly get their legs underneath them, and I think they're going to be fine.
I think they're going to be fine, too. I wouldn't be surprised if they won the President's Trophy. To me, it's between the Capitals and the Lightning and the Penguins as far as the top teams in the Eastern Conference right now. And the way Montreal's playing, you might be throwing them in there at the end of the season. But certainly, you know, you don't want this to continue. You want some of your top guys to start putting the puck in the net.
The only thing I would say is, you know, on the opposite end of the ice, the Jets, the Capitals have only allowed 14 goals again. Mm-hmm. So they are second best in the Eastern Conference right now defensively.
Dave, their possession numbers and all that are good. I mean, and you're right, Braden Holtby is one of the top goalies, if not, you know, a top three goalie in the NHL right now. So certainly, you know, they're a good defensive team. They're a fast team. But, you know, I'm just putting it out there. Right now, you know, they haven't come out of the gate flying after last year, you know, with the 120-point season. They did get knocked out of the playoffs a little bit earlier than they wanted, but just something that, you know, I was a little bit surprised by early on. They're not scoring at the rate that we're used to.
Yeah, and like I said, I just think that, you know, it's probably not a bad thing for a team that's as offensively minded as they are to maybe have, you know, a good defensive core, you know, kind of structure in place, because you know the offense is going to, because as you just alluded to, the offense is going to come. So, you know, make sure your defense is set. And I think that's maybe what they're doing, because look, they've got a winning record. You know, they haven't allowed a lot of goals against. So, I mean, it's probably not, you know, Holtby is, you know, an all-star goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, you don't really have that significant of a concern. But, you know, you want to make sure you're not going to allow a lot of pucks to get into that net, because you know you're going to be able to put them in. You know, like you said, Ovechkin, Backstrom, Kuznetsov, all those guys can put the puck. You know, Oshie, like, you got a ton of guys who can put the puck in the net.
Joe Beninati, the Washington Capitals play-by-play broadcaster, joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuke with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Joe Beninati. Joe is the Washington Capitals play-by-play broadcaster. He joins us from Vancouver, where the Capitals and the Canucks will do battle later tonight. Joe, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Guys, my pleasure. Drew, Ezra, Dave, always good to talk with you.
Likewise, Joe. The Capitals, obviously, a home-and-home series next week with the Jets coming here on Tuesday. The Jets will return the favor on Thursday in Washington. Capitals off to a, you know, it's not fair to call it a slow start at 3-2-1, but maybe not as, you know, as fast out of the gates as we may have expected given last season's President's Trophy winning season. How would you assess the Capitals through the first six games of the 2016-17 season?
I guess I would call it uneven. I mean, anybody who looks at the standings, and I realize that Washington's played the fewest games of any team in the Metro, but to see the Caps as the lowest scoring team in that division is startling. The puck isn't moving around the ice as well as it normally does, and I think now is a good time to catch the Capitals because I firmly expect this team will improve and elevate its play as the season goes along. There's so much to be said about last year and what is looked at as a missed opportunity. A fabulous season, a record-setting win total, 120 points, another President's Trophy, and unfortunately another second-round dismissal at the hands of an eventual Stanley Cup champion. And that was looked at as the team that should have done it, would have, could have, should have. Didn't get it done. This team may actually turn out to be better, although I don't know that it might look that way in the regular season. I think all eyes for this Capitals team are focused upon April, May, and June, but the thing you need to remember is you've got to get there and be playing well to get there. So the 82 games of the regular season is not a throwaway by any stretch, but right now they're not playing like themselves, and this is an interesting stretch that we're heading into, which includes the home-and-home with the Jets, but this starts 3-4 nights. After sitting for a couple of days in Vancouver, I expect Washington to be pretty rambunctious tonight.
Joe, at the June draft in Buffalo, the Washington Capitals traded a couple of second-round picks to acquire forward Lars Eller. How has he fit in so far?
I know the preseason guys doesn't count for anything, but I thought he was the best forward for the Caps in the preseason. And remember now there would be a bunch of guys who would have been missing on World Cup duty at that time, but Lars seems to have fit in very nicely. The regular season, first six games or so, we haven't seen as much of an offensive presence from him. Again, in the preseason, he was playing on a top two, top six kind of role. He's a very good skater. From what we had always known about him when playing against Lars with respect to him in Montreal, he's not easy to play against. He's a solid two-way guy. He can be a little bit ornery. You always wanted more from him. I think that's what they would say in Montreal. But for the Caps, it gives them arguably a strong down the middle that you could find from 1-4. I mean, however you align Backstrom and Kuznetsov to follow with Eller and Beagle, I mean, that's a center compliment that most teams would be very, very appreciative of.
Joe, here in Winnipeg, everybody is talking about, our Patrick Laine and his big shot. And, of course, he models himself after Alexander Ovechkin and constantly references Alexander Ovechkin when asked about players that, you know, how did he develop his shot and who did he watch. Does Ovechkin know that Patrick Laine is heaping this type of praise on him?
I think so. I mean, Alex has become, over the years, a lot more in tune with what's going on, not just with his own game, but with the league and as an ambassador for such. I watch the highlights of Laine, and it brings me back 12 years ago. The speed with which he attacks the net, the shot that he takes, it reminds me of number 8. The overtime game winner, I forget against who it was that he scored, but that was an Ovechkin goal. So you can tell that the young man has studied number 8 and he's modeled his game after Alex, and I'm sure that when they are on the ice together in the week ahead, it's going to be pretty fun. It's just amazing to watch players of that caliber at that age. And for someone who's had the pleasure of describing Alex Ovechkin's game for some 12 seasons now, it's neat to see McDavid at top speed. It's neat to see Matthews throwing the puck around the way he does. And for Laine to shoot it the way he does, it makes you just think back to the beginnings of Ovechkin and Crosby.
Joe Beninati is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joe is the Washington Capitals play-by-play broadcaster. Joe, if I told you back in June, right after Braden Holtby won the Vezina Trophy as the league's best goaltender, that he wouldn't play in a game at the World Cup of Hockey, how surprised would you be? And then as an addendum to that question, what was Holtby's experience after he came back from Toronto? How did he view his experience as, for whatever reason, the third-string goaltender for Team Canada?
He really enjoyed it, and from what I gathered, practicing against the elite of the elite was something that was something that he really enjoyed. And Braden uses every day to get better. He's trying to improve his game at all times. You asked me the initial question about would he be surprised, or was I surprised to see him in that role? If Carey Price was healthy and ready to go, Braden Holtby has no troubles deferring that net to Carey Price. I ask Braden all the time, are there any goaltenders who you admire more than others? And he always comes out with two names in particular. It's Carey Price and Corey Schneider. So sitting second or sitting third chair to Carey and watching him take Canada where Canada wanted to go, Braden is obviously filled with pride and wanted to play and wanted to have that net and wear his country's sweater. But with respect to Price, he'll take a step back and obviously let Carey do his work.
Right. What about the Corey Crawford there? I mean, I was shocked. I mean, I'll be perfectly honest with you, Joe, that I was shocked that, you know, that Braden Holtby was on, you know, the quote-unquote depth chart, was behind Corey Crawford there. And I was wondering if Holtby was maybe using that as some sort of motivation this season.
It's not the way I would have set it out, and that's not to slight Corey Crawford, who's obviously had a very fine career with a tremendous organization. I think the world of Braden Holtby, I think he's going to be even better this year than he was last. Does that going to mean he's going to win 48 times or more? No, probably not. But I think he'll become an even better goaltender. He's been, again, I use the word uneven to describe Washington through six games. I could say the same for Braden, and I think he would admit that. But the one thing he's been telling the media that travels closely with the Caps is that a little early season adversity is going to be good for this club, and that includes for himself.
Joe, I think you'd agree that Coach Barry Trotz didn't tinker with his forward lines as much as other coaches would, and it looked like in yesterday's practice yesterday in Vancouver, he had Ovechkin and Backstrom together with Justin Williams on that top line, but then he had Kuznetsov between Tom Wilson and Marcus Johansson with Andrei Burakovsky and TJ Oshie dropping down to that third line with Lars Eller. Is he just trying to find a good balance and trying to get, you know, some of these guys going offensively?
One thing that Barry does when he does put lines into a blender, and this is for us, for watching the Caps for as long as we do, this is spinning him around a little bit. What he's trying to do is put a grinder-type player on every line. You know, he wants to get Williams in there to stir up the corners. Reuniting Ovechkin and Backstrom is like going back to a comfortable shoe, guys. That can always happen, and those two will click. And it's not to say that Kuznetsov won't be reunited with Ovechkin before too long either, but things haven't gone so smoothly for Evgeny to this point. Putting Tom Wilson on that line will hopefully create some space, will hopefully create a loose puck or two that Kuznetsov can pounce upon and then work through some offensive schedule with Johansson as well. I just think when Barry does this sort of tinkering, he's basically trying to make sure that he has one type of grind, stir-it-up guy. But asking Oshie to forecheck strongly with Eller and Burakovsky, keeping Beagle in place, giving Connolly a shot. Connolly's another player who generated chances, quite a bit of them, didn't get it to go in preseason, but they like Brett. And I know no slight to Daniel Winnick, who I would expect comes out of the lineup tonight. You never know what you're going to see. This is tonight, tomorrow, and then Tuesday. Things could be entirely different tomorrow when the Caps go to Saddle Dome to see the Flames. But for now, he's just tinkering. He's just experimenting. There are combinations that he has in mind. More than anything is to keep couples, two guys together for most of the time. And whenever you go back to 8 and 19, Backstrom and Ovechkin, it's usually a good fit.
Joe, you know, it's hard to we're at the beginning of the season, basically, and it's hard to fast forward already to the end, but the expectations are that the Capitals team will be one of the top teams in the East and, you know, challenging potentially for that Stanley Cup. What is the ownership's view in terms of this team winning now?
Well, I think, guys, short of speaking with Ted Leonsis and ownership and management, I think this team knows as it's presently constructed, guys, that this is the last kick because of how closely the caps are to the salary cap and with respect to whose contracts are coming up for renewal in this offseason ahead. This group's going to change. I think they realize it, that if they're going to ever get it done as presently constructed, now is the time. It's going to be a now or never type situation because Evgeny Kuznetsov's contract is up. And if he produces the way he did last year, you're going to have to give him a dramatic salary increase. Carl Alsner's contract is up. Do you save money and let Carl go away? Who do you pay? Do you let Justin Williams walk in his mid to late 30s? Do you pay T.J. Oshie, who's going to demand more if he produces 25 or 30 goals again? There are a number of other players who are also going to be up from a salary standpoint and maybe as restricted free agents. There's a lot of juggling potentially that's there. And I know from time to time people will use the Chicago Blackhawk model, but you have to win the cup first before you blow the team up. And we've seen Chicago win cups, change their rosters, win cups again. That's the model that Washington would love to follow, but they know that this group is, you know, on its last as a group together. There's going to be some changes in the future. There just has to be with respect to fitting everybody in under a cap.
Joe Beninati is a Washington Capitals broadcaster. He's going to do the Caps and the Canucks from Vancouver later on tonight. Joe, we really appreciate your time. We'll let you get ready for that entertaining contest. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll see you Tuesday here in Winnipeg.
Guys, my pleasure. Looking forward to it.
Likewise, Joe. Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss the surge in goal scoring thus far this season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Joe Beninati, always one of our favorite guests. He does a great job on the Capitals broadcast. He'll be in town on Tuesday as the Capitals and the Jets do battle. Before Joe, we were joined by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, Amanda Stein of TSN 690, and Michael Trakos of Post Media. Gentlemen, as we hit almost the end of October and almost the end of the first month of the NHL season, thus far there's been a surge in goal scoring. You maybe didn't see it last night in that Jets 1-0 victory over the Avalanche, but we certainly saw it in some previous games. The Jets participated in the 5-4 victories over the Hurricanes and the Leafs. As an example, Frank Saravelli, TSN senior hockey reporter, addressed the surge in goal scoring earlier this week.
Oh, it has to be. It's even in the U.S., you said in Canada, people love goal scoring. In the U.S., this is one candidate that we can all get behind, is more goals in hockey. And it's incredible to see the impact that these young players have had when you look at Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine and go down the list. Connor McDavid has been tremendous this year, as we all expected him to be. But there's been some other young players that have really, you know, popped up around the league. Travis Konecny in Philadelphia has 4 points already, and the rookies have been great, and I think that's what's helped lead to this uptick in scoring, where we've seen a lot of 7-4 and 6-5 and, you know, games with 10 goals between the two teams. It feels like 1988 all over again. And the question, as you said, is whether this can continue or not. And my gut would say that probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Consider that goaltender save percentages this year are right around 902, and the league average last year was 915.
Okay.
I'd imagine that would level out over time, but I don't think we've ever really seen this flurry of scoring from young players, and it's interesting to see whether they can keep that up. And also, you know, just to see that historically, the sample size from the first 50 games of the season has actually been somewhat of a successful barometer in terms of judging what the goal scoring will be throughout the entire year. So as I wrote that on TSN.ca today, I was a little bit surprised taking a look at the numbers that just from a 50-game sample, you can sort of accurately predict how scoring might end up. And that's really good news for the NHL.
It would be good news for the NHL if it continues. So the question to you, fine gentlemen, do you expect this increase in goal scoring to continue throughout the course of the NHL season, or is this just a temporary blip, an early season blip, before coaches and their stifling systems get back to sucking the fun out of an NHL game?
Yeah, Drew, it's a good question, and I think it's pretty obvious, guys, that goal scoring is going to go down. Right now, early on in the season, there are an average of 5.91 goals per game, and you expect it to be closer to 5.5 goals per game. But I'll tell you this much, guys, it's great for hockey. And I think, you know, the fact that Connor McDavid is leading the league in scoring, and then you have Patrick Laine and Austin Matthews, who were just drafted 3 months ago, the number one and two overall picks, the fact that they're leading the league in goals right now, I mean, I think it's just great for hockey. I don't think we've seen this since the second last lockout with Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin and Evgeny Malkin coming into the NHL and really showing us that they were the next wave of superstars in the NHL. So it's not going to hold up, Drew, but I'll say this much, though. It is great for hockey. I mean, you know, Sidney Crosby, I said this, when he went down with an injury, you know, that wasn't good for hockey. He was coming off of arguably his best season ever in the NHL, not stats-wise, but when you consider he won his second Stanley Cup, Dave, he won the MVP at the World Cup, leading Canada to the championship. So, you know, to have these young players performing at this level so early on in the season, I mean, that's what everybody's talking about. That's what most hockey fans want to see. Hockey fans want to see these guys scoring goals, right? And that's not to say that there can't be an entertaining 1-0 game. I actually thought last night's game between the Jets and Avalanche was a pretty entertaining 1-0 game. Having said that, Drew, there are some terrible 1-0, 2-1 games that we've seen, absolute stinkers. But, I mean, this is what hockey fans, especially young fans, I mean, I'm a little bit older, you know, now, but I've always been someone who appreciates the defensive side of hockey, but I'm always someone that likes to see goals. I mean, yeah, once you get into the playoffs, guys, you know, especially in the later rounds, then you see teams start to tighten up a little bit. So, are the goals going to continue at this pace? Probably not, but you'd hope that it's pretty close to this pace, whether it's 5.9 or 5.7. You certainly want these guys to keep scoring goals, and I think they will. I mean, Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine, you know, and Connor McDavid, I mean, these guys are all going to be at the top of the scoring list as far as I'm concerned. Are they going to have some struggles? Absolutely, they're going to have struggles. They're not going to score 2 goals or 4 goals every single night. So, I mean, this is great for hockey. And, you know, for all of this talk about reducing goalie equipment and ways to, you know, increase scoring, I mean, are these measures actually going to increase scoring that much? I don't think so. I mean, good hockey and you know, letting these guys play and opening up your systems a little bit. Like, I think, you know, Todd McClellan in Edmonton has noticed that, you know, you kind of got to let Connor McDavid do his thing to a certain degree.
Sure.
You know that, you know, that's going to result in, you know, possibly some odd man rushes coming back the other way. But when you have the most talented offensive player in the league,
let your horses run.
Yeah. You got to let him do his thing.
Dave, before I let you get in here, here's a quick sampling of some numbers to back up this argument. Individual teams are averaging 29.5 shots on net per game, nearly identical to last season's 29.6. So shots on net per game hasn't changed. Average save percentage has taken a huge dive from last season, from 915 to 905, a 10-point drop that's at its lowest level since 2006-2007. So far this season, teams are averaging 22.5 scoring chances per game in regulation, just under 4 more chances per game than last season. This is translated to 0.3 more goals per team per game. A 20% increase in scoring chances has led to a 12% increase in scoring. Overall, last season, just 30% of all shot attempts were taken within the slot area, whereas this season that number is up to 36.5%. That change dramatically drops expected save percentage for goalies and makes for a more exciting game. So basically what you can say is scoring chances are up. Shots on goal may not be, but scoring chances from scoring the score zone have increased so far this season.
I think it's somewhat emblematic of the fact that it's a young man's league and there's a lot more younger players and they're learning structures and they're still developing. And, you know, we saw it in the Jets' first few games. Like, I'll be honest with you, I was looking down on from our seats in the press box and I was like, I don't recognize this team because the structure isn't kind of what you're used to seeing because there's more chaos to it. And Paul Maurice has used that word. And it's interesting because he's injected that word into the conversation this season, chaos. And you're seeing it. And I think he means it more from a perspective of wreaking havoc within the, you know, the other team's structure. But in his own structure, there's definitely some chaos. And you see it with, you know, and again, because it's happening here, you have to assume that in other places where there is an injection in youth, they're also seeing it. And so you see that the structure crumbles. And what does that mean? If the structure isn't as strong as it was previously, chances are going to increase because there's more opportunity for them, right? Because the whole idea of a structure is that you're limiting your opponent's opportunities at good chances to score goals. And if it's breaking down, then there's more likely a chance to get a goal. So I think what's happening is that you're seeing these young players coming in. They don't have, you know, years in a system, like, for example, playing with the Moose for a number of years and then going through a Jet system. A lot of them are coming. Look, Kyle Connor's coming right into the system. Patrick Laine is coming right into the system. So
they're learning on the job is what you're saying.
Exactly. And I think that what we're seeing now, I mean, it sounds from the perspective of the articles that are being written that it's a radical change from last season. But I just think that it may just be this injection of youth that we're seeing in the NHL.
Yeah, David, when you talk about the injection of youth and the fact that it's a young man's game, it's a young man's game. And we've heard that a lot early on this year, and it seems like every year the average age of an NHLer goes down. So it certainly is becoming more and more of a young man's game. But I also think it's a function of the salary cap and the function of young defensemen. We've focused a lot on the young forwards, but if you look around the league, look at the Winnipeg Jets as a perfect example. Josh Morrissey's on the top pair with Dustin Byfuglien. Look at the Dallas Stars with Esa Lindell. He's a rookie. Look at the Chicago Blackhawks. They've got Michael Kempney, Gustav Forsling. You look at the Colorado Avalanche last night. They've got Nikita Zadorov. Look around the NHL and you have almost every single team that has an 18, 19, 20-year-old defenseman in the lineup. And I think that's a function of the salary cap. The fact that most teams can only pay two or three of their defensemen more than $4 million a year. And that's going to generate more scoring chances. As you said, Drew, scoring chances are up. On the flip side, because you have a lot of young defensemen that are learning the game, we know that defensemen take longer time to develop. So I think this is all good. It's opening up the game. You're seeing more scoring chances, more goals. And even if it doesn't keep up to this exact pace, I wouldn't be surprised if goal scoring at the end of the year, the average goals per game is higher than it was last year. And this is all a good thing. This means that the NHL isn't going to have four meetings every year talking about, you know, increasing the size of the nets and reducing the goalie equipment. I mean, it's enough of that.
You look at the NFL, and the NFL, you know, a number of years ago did everything in their power to artificially increase scoring. Everything is a automatic first down. Every 5-yard penalty tends to be an automatic first down. Pass interference is called on a lot of ticky-tack plays. It's because people like, for the most part, points. That 6-all game between the Seahawks and the Cardinals last Sunday night was not entertaining. People watched it with morbid curiosity. People want to see, you know, chicks dig homers as the old chicks dig the long ball as the old baseball analogy went. You know, people like to see offense. They want to see the best players doing great things, be it on the ice or on the baseball field or on the football field. So even if you have to artificially increase the offense by whatever means necessary, people aren't going to complain that they went to see a 6-4 hockey game as opposed to a 2-1 hockey game.
Chicks dig Dave Minuk too, though.
Well, I can't even speak after that one, but you know, fire wagon hockey. I mean, the whole idea, you know, in the 80s was it was wide open. There was tons of scoring. Right. So, I mean, you just saw it. And honestly, like, you know, they were talking about it the other day when, you know, I don't remember Edmonton was playing, but I think maybe Edmonton, Calgary, whatever. It was the goal. They thought the game was going to be an 11 goal game. And I'm like, that used to be the norm. That used to be the norm where goaltending wasn't to this, you know, goaltending wasn't as efficient as it is now. Mm-hmm. And goal scoring was much better. I mean, the reality was you had less players, you had better players. It's because it was obviously a smaller league. But the fact is that it was very enjoyable to watch, you know, Timo Solani score 3 or 4 goals. You know, see Phil Housley pot a few. You know, it's a different era, of course. Alexei Zamlov scored 5 goals in 1 game.
Sure.
And Dave, I think, you know, for the last, you know, 10 to 15 years, you know, hockey fans and the NHL and just the hockey world in general has been obsessed. I think super obsessed.
Super obsessed.
Well, really, though, with, you know, trying to increase goal scoring, and you look at it and you have, you know, we talked about it. Patrick Laine and Auston Matthews, the top two draft picks of the 2016 draft, they could each score 50 goals. They're at the very least going to score 30 or 35 goals. And, you know, we're still talking about, you know, the goal scoring's up, but is it going to stay up? Like, I think we should just enjoy the hockey right now for what it is, and it's excellent. I don't think, you know, the NHL's ever been at a better place right now. You have all of these young superstars coming into the league. Connor McDavid could win the scoring race this year.
Which, hold on, you predicted.
Yeah. Well, I think other people predicted too. But
oh, you were the only person.
I certainly can see it happening. So I think, you know, goal scoring is up. Let's enjoy it while it lasts.
Let's do it. It's, until it dwindles and we sit there months from now, hopefully, and say, why is goal scoring so far down and why are these games so boring? Let's enjoy it while they are exciting. When we come back, we look around the NHL, NHL news and notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290, online, tsn1290.ca.
Drew, just pace yourself with those Timbits.
Holy Dinah.
One Timbit. It's what I had is one whole Timbit.
It was like
Timbit.
Watching a vacuum.
You have to finish chewing before we go back on air.
Yeah, I did finish chewing,
you have a tendency to keep chewing.
No, I actually stalled before coming back from the break so that I could finish swallowing my Timbits. So, yes, we're all good here. Thank you.
I buy a box of Timbits every week. I only end up
very
getting
generous,
like one or two of
very
them.
Very generous.
Yeah. They're always gone by the third hour. I get like two. I want more.
Then you should buy 20 Timbits. There's an easy solution to your problem is that Timbits are readily available and goods and services can be exchanged for money.
I'll just spend more money every week.
Okay, go for it. Nobody told you to buy the Timbits.
Spend $20 a month on Timbits. I don't have that kind of scratch.
Who knew you had a Timbit budget?
Let's be honest. He spends way more than $20 a month on Timbits. Nobody buys that. These are the only Timbits he's purchasing.
These are the show Timbits. Then after he drops me off, he goes and gets his own.
He gets his own personal Timbits.
Well, they actually just leave a garbage bag full at the back on the Timbits.
You have to fight a raccoon on a nightly basis for the leftover Timbits. Yeah. My money's on the raccoon, for the record. NHL news and notes, a look around some of the doings in the NHL. Let's start with this. We talked about it earlier on the program.
Are doings a transpiring?
There's a doings a transpiring, boy. The Las Vegas NHL franchise will receive a 48-hour head start to discuss a contract extension with any pending UFA or RFAs that are left unprotected by their current NHL franchise. Meaning, for example, if the Winnipeg Jets decide to expose Drew Stafford, let's say, as a pending unrestricted free agent, the Las Vegas franchise can talk to Drew Stafford in a 48-hour window prior to the expansion draft. And if they were to sign him to a contract, then the Jets would not lose any other players in the expansion draft. Do you like the idea of this window of opportunity to talk to any pending UFAs or RFAs?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, right? It's logical. We talked about it earlier in the show. I mean, you have to have some type of guarantee that you're not going to pick someone in the expansion draft and then they're not going to sign with you, right? So I think that was a really good example. And Pierre LeBrun talked about Ben Bishop, who's a pending unrestricted free agent after this season. Many
Brent
people
Burns.
Pardon me?
I thought he talked about Brent Burns.
And Ben Bishop.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Well, Brent Burns would be a good example. I don't think there's any way that Brent Burns isn't signed to a contract extension by the San Jose Sharks. So I think
it's a theoretical thing. Yeah,
right. Bishop, I think, is more realistic because many people thought Ben Bishop was going to be traded earlier in the season because they are going to go with Andre Vasilevsky, who's a good young goaltender. So I think that's an example. You mentioned Drew Stafford, but anyways, the rule though makes sense, and it kind of begs the question why this wasn't in there in the beginning. But, certainly it's going to get a lot more interesting for GMs, guys, as it gets close to the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. Because are you going to keep a player such as a Ben Bishop? Steven Stamkos was a guy that many people thought was going to be traded, even though the Lightning kept him for last year's playoffs. But are teams going to keep a player for the playoff run and going into the playoffs, knowing that there's a good chance that the Las Vegas expansion team can negotiate with that player and then based on those negotiations, pick that player? So it's going to be very interesting because, as we know, teams can only protect 10 or 11 players and, only one goalie. And I think the goaltenders are the most interesting. But when it comes to some of those fringe guys, those guys between the ages of 25 and 30, who are you going to protect? I think when it comes to the Jets, it's not going to be as difficult as some teams. The teams that I think are going to get squeezed the most are going to be those teams with a lot of veterans on their roster. So you're talking about a team like the Washington Capitals, for example.
Sure.
A guy like Justin Williams, for example. We talked about him with Joe Beninati. If you're going to have to pay him and, he's a pending free agent, what are you going to do? Are you going to just expose him and let him negotiate with the Las Vegas team? So to me, this rule makes a lot of sense, Drew.
I can tell you, I wouldn't mind if that rule applied to us as well, because I'll sign with Las Vegas if they'd like.
We know how fond you are of Vegas. It's not news at this point.
Spend a little time in that city.
Yes, exactly. You call ahead. You got your guys. You call when you're coming to town. Well,
I didn't know I was that famous.
Do you have guys?
Okay. I may have some guys.
Yeah, exactly. You have guys. Anyways, it's an interesting idea. I don't hate it. I just, you know, it's another interesting wrinkle that teams.
I think it's a good idea to give them the advantage to start their franchise off the right way.
I don't think that many players, particularly pending UFAs, unless they really want to play in Vegas, are going to jump at the opportunity to sign with a team prior to July 1st, particularly that an expansion team. So I mean,
especially considering you have no idea how that team is going to look, right? Like at that point, you're going to be like,
yeah, you don't know how they're going to be constructed when right. the you know when the expansion draft is finally complete. The RFA side is a little bit more interesting because I think those guys, you know, if a guy you know wants out of Winnipeg or wants out of Edmonton or wants out of Washington and is a pending RFA, well, maybe then you know they're willing to go to Las Vegas and give up their you know RFA rights. Not that they have very many RFA rights, but it's an interesting wrinkle. I think that we shall see how that plays out over the course of the expansion draft in June. This one came down a couple weeks ago. We sort of missed it in the course of the hullabaloo at the start of the year. Matt Murray signed a 3-year, $11.25 million contract extension with the Pittsburgh Penguins, an average annual value of $3.75 million. Everybody expects Matt Murray will be the man in net for the Penguins going forward. Was last year and backstopping them to the Stanley Cup championship. The reason why I find it so interesting is that you know, it's not a big dollar figure, and Connor Hellebuck is an RFA in the same situation that Matt Murray was in just currently. So I think that this is probably the high end for any potential future Connor Hellebuck contract extension.
Yeah, it could be, Drew. And when you talk about Matt Murray, he obviously hasn't played. I don't think he's actually played a game. If he has, it's only been one game. But he was injured.
Yeah,
he was injured to start the season. And Marc-Andre Fleury's been excellent. I believe he started every single game for the Pittsburgh Penguins so far. So when you talk about Matt Murray, he was excellent, winning the Stanley Cup for the Pittsburgh Penguins last year as a rookie. It surprised many people. He certainly, you know, had the pedigree in the American Hockey League and previous levels. So you know, it's a good signing for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And again, you know. Well, many people thought that the Penguins were going to trade Marc-Andre Fleury either at the draft or before the season started. But, you know, if you're Jim Rutherford, why are you going to trade your veteran goaltender when you don't have to? And especially when you have aspirations to win another Stanley Cup. This Pittsburgh Penguins team is going to make the playoffs, guys. And I think they would like to have two good goalies on their roster. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if they expose him before the season is over, when the playoffs are over, because I believe they will. I don't think they're going to expose Matt Murray. So, you know, the contract made a lot of sense. He's your goalie of the future.
Yeah.
Even though Marc-Andre Fleury, I think, you know, he's kind of been cast aside a little bit. He's the guy, he's been the man there for so long. But certainly when it comes to the protecting only one goalie, who are you going to go with?
Or are you going to go with the young guy who's got the you know utmost of potential ahead of him, as opposed to the veteran who
right.
you know may have already hit his peak? No disrespect intended to Marc-Andre Fleury. I just think it's a very reasonable dollar figure for a guy coming off the Stanley Cup, and I think lots of teams around the league would be happy with that contract. Lots of you know young goaltenders or goaltenders coming off their rookie seasons or their rookie contracts who have good performances might be a little bit disappointed with the dollar figure involved.
Right. Well, he's had one good playoffs. He hasn't played a full year in the NHL. You're not going to give him $7 million a year, right?
No,
he hasn't earned that yet. And you already have Marc-Andre Fleury making that type of money,
right?
It's
a little surprising he would sign so soon this year. You know, why not wait until January, February, March? Maybe you have another great year. And your dollar figure can be bumped up a little bit, but I mean, I understand it from both sides. It's just it's an interesting contract to get signed, and you know how it's viewed throughout the NHL. Moving to Seattle, where the issue has always been the arena. There isn't a suitable one for NHL hockey. We know that the NHL itself would love to be in Seattle. No disrespect to the city of Quebec, Quebec City, but we know that Seattle would certainly be a higher destination for the NHL than Quebec City would be. There's a proposal now on the table for a completely privately funded arena that could be a game changer with regard to NHL expansion to Seattle if it comes to fruition.
You know, clearly the ownership in Seattle wants basketball. I mean, they want to bring back the Supersonics. That's the whole goal. But they also see the potential in having an NHL franchise, especially one now that would really give that West Coast that presence, right? Because you'd go right along the coast. You have the California-based teams. Then you'd have a Seattle-based team, and you'd have Vancouver. So you really have that. And the NHL has to like the idea of really kind of consolidating the West Coast and having, you know, that, you know, be a more Pacific division as opposed to some of the teams that they have maybe that are, you know, like the Calgary, the Edmonton. Maybe they want to have more of that a true Pacific division. So I think it's a good from the NHL's perspective. If you're looking for a market, you know, the Kansas City still gets mentioned because they have a suitable arena. The question for them is the fan base. But, yeah, no, I like the idea of Seattle simply just because you're going to add in a spot you need to add. You know, I think it's such a disproportionate number in terms of teams that are in the East. So if you're going to add a Quebec, which obviously they want to do, they have the arena, they have the fan base, they have the money, you know, but from the NHL's perspective, and look at the market you're getting with Seattle. Like, that's a big market, right?
Sure.
And it's a relatively untapped market for professional sports.
Well,
right?
What's going to happen? I mean, I think the not the problem, but if the NHL goes there, their uphill battle is going to be both basketball and hockey will go there at more or less the same time, presumably,
right,
if this new arena gets built. And the NHL will always be viewed maybe as the redheaded stepchild of the NBA team in that city. And they're going to have to sort of start from scratch to try and develop a market which is a basketball crazy market that has been without a basketball franchise since the Supersonics up and left and went to Oklahoma City so many years ago now.
You know, Drew, this is a little bit off topic, but going back to what we talked about before, Marc-Andre Fleury actually has started all 8 games for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mike Condon came in relief for 1 period there, so Fleury has started all 8 games. Matt Murray is now back as the backup, but you know, just to go back to what I was talking about before, but you know, as on the topic of Seattle and, you know, new expansion teams, I truly believe that there really only is room for one more expansion team, guys. So it is between Seattle and Quebec, and Quebec has the new arena. I mean, they are having events there. They had a World Cup of Hockey, a pre-tournament game, if you remember, and they've had concerts and all of that, but certainly Seattle doesn't have the arena, right? So we're talking about, you know, what if Seattle gets the arena and all of that, but that's, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 years away, right? So as far as I'm concerned, Quebec deserves an NHL team. The NHL has been there before. I think they have a great fan base. You know, you see it on the website, Dave, and on our social media. I mean, Quebec fans were very supportive of the Jets coming back to Winnipeg. So, you know, you don't want to have to choose between Quebec and Seattle. But right now, I mean, if you're talking about which city is more ready for an NHL team, it's clear it's Quebec.
Sure.
So yeah. I'm not saying that Seattle, and you know, Dave makes a good point. Seattle's a great market, great city from what I've heard. I've never visited there. You know, I've been on the West Coast, I've been on the border there at White Rock, but I've never actually been to Seattle. But I've heard it's a great city, you know, great sports fans, just great people in general. But I mean, we're talking about, you know, what if, you know, what if they get an arena and all that. But that's a long time away, guys.
I like Seattle. It's kind of a poor man's Vancouver, but I like Seattle. It's a good place to visit. But no, I will
Las Vegas, Seattle, is there anywhere you don't travel?
Well, you know, I'm a well-traveled man.
Or were you sleepless when you were there?
I was not. I slept well. No, I didn't stay. I was only visiting Seattle. Did a little day trip from Vancouver. But I will say this. If you had to choose...
You went to Pike Place Market, you know, throw a fish or two?
I did, but I actually was there to see a Mariners game.
Ah.
It was a 13-inning game.
Ah.
Yeah, it was good. Actually, yeah. It was my first interleague game. It was Mariners and Colorado.
Mariners, yeah, a legendary rivalry if one ever existed between the Mariners and the Rockies.
Larry Walker.
I will say,
Rockies,
though, it was a 13-inning game, and Ichimo, I know I said it right.
Okay.
Hit a
13th, you mean Ichiro.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he knows.
hit a 13th-inning triple.
But was it a home run that hit somebody you were with in the face, like happened to one of us in Philadelphia?
That was the best moment of my life.
I was describing that. I literally had that conversation yesterday. We were talking how... our good friend Elke, and we were talking about how
at the draft in Philadelphia.
At the draft in Philadelphia, some of us, Drew, myself, Richard, decided to stick it out because we're ball fans, and we stuck it out to the 14th inning of the.
Oh, it was
Phillies.
Longer than 14. I thought it was 16 innings.
No. I'm almost positive. Well, I could check, but I'm almost positive it was the 14th inning.
Okay.
Actually, it could be right because I felt like maybe it was almost 2 games.
Yeah,
maybe
it was like 2 games
maybe
worth.
Maybe it was the 16th inning.
Hold
anyways.
On, was it the 14th or the 16th?
Well, you left in the 10th.
Yeah, when you found out that they stopped serving beer, you got the hell out of that stadium faster than I've seen you
live.
Yeah,
shout out to the staff there. They do a great job.
Philly Dan. And our good friend, Andrew Hessler-Patterson, took off like rockets.
When there was no beer, boom, like just a shadow left in the dust of
Huss
you guys.
Huss and I were thirsty.
It was like watching the
Roadrunner. You and Huss still are thirsty, and I mean that in all manners of the word.
But anyways, getting back to the event, so Chase Utley, bottom of the either 14th or 16th, but I think Drew might be right, it was 16th, hits a bomb a million miles in the air, and it is right for us. And I think it's coming right for me. And I've got no hat, which is rare for me. And I got no hat on to use as a glove. So I'm thinking, these are just my bare hands. And I'm standing under this ball that's probably a million miles in the air, and I'm thinking, and it's coming down at a high velocity. I'm like,
it's
moving. I'm watching it. I'm watching, and I got this much time to think. And I'm thinking, there ain't no chance. I'm standing underneath this thing. So I'm standing there, and all of a sudden you see me take one step to the right and move. Now, it didn't end up landing where I was anyways, but it landed just to the left of me, I think. Drew was sitting right in front of me, and the ball hits the
back of a seat.
Back of a seat, and the sound it made was like a bomb going off. That's how loud it was. And then ricochets, smokes Drew in the face. Drew, but to his credit, though, dove for that ball like he was in the game.
Hey.
He wanted the ball. He wanted that ball.
You know, we don't win the Jew League softball title by cowering when the ball's coming at us. We go head first for it.
Speak for yourself. But anyways, the fact of the matter is Drew went for that ball like he was playing the game, didn't get it, and then the ball ricocheted, hit him in the face. The very ball he was going for ricocheted, hit him in the face, and then this young kid who was sitting the next section over came up with the ball. But Drew was, to his credit, like I said, was down on the ground fighting for that ball, didn't get it. And the best part about it was afterwards I took a picture of Drew and the kid with the kid holding the ball beside Drew's now bruising face.
Yeah, my now fat lip. So that happened in Philadelphia at the draft. Was that 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
Anyways, let's
go
to break.
The C was angry that day, my friends, like an old man trying to send back soup at a deli.
Return soup.
One final segment when we return. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Off against Gagne, and they duel right towards the hash marks. Knocked down along the boards by Regier. Afanajinov picks it up, works it back, scores! Shuvalov wins it in overtime. The Russians are world junior champions.
That was 1999 heartbreak at the old Winnipeg Arena as the Russians defeated Team Canada in the gold medal game at the World Junior Hockey Championships. News coming earlier this week that True North Sports and Entertainment, in conjunction with Saskatoon, the city of Saskatoon, I guess, has put in a bid to host the 2019 World Junior Hockey Championship back here in Fair Peg City alongside with Saskatoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This final segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors is bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, Chris Locke. Tickets are going quickly. Very few available. Check him out. RumorsComedyClub.com.
Drew, when's Ariel Spears going to be here?
Aries Spears, as he. Aries, not Ariel. That was my mistake on Wednesday's midweek show. Aries Spears comes right after the new year, January 5th through 7th. Tickets are on sale now to see Aries Spears, a concert series event. You may remember him from Mad TV.
You know, just for fun, you know, we played the clip of Artem Shubarov scoring that winning goal. I think we were all in the Winnipeg Arena for that game. That was just absolutely horrible. And didn't he score it on Roberto Luongo?
That is correct. Yeah. Roberto Luongo was the goaltender.
I got tickets at the last second for that game.
No, he actually, 2 years later, played for the Manitoba Moose, just 19 games. But I looked up his NHL totals, 228 games, 25 goals, 58 points. So he didn't exactly have a stellar NHL career. But
I didn't remember him having any NHL career.
Well, he played for the Canucks, just the one team. And then he went to Russia. So you know, Artem Shubarov, they had a good team that year, though. I believe Maxim Afanajenov was on that team, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so.
Yeah, so, I mean, they had a lot of good young players, and so did the Canadians at that time. Shout out to Rico Fatta.
If I recall correctly, Robin Regier was on that team. If I recall correctly, that 99 Team Canada wasn't supposed to be a medal contender. And it was very unexpected that they were able to get all the way to the gold medal game, overtime at the gold medal game at that. And, you know, it was a unexpected performance by Team Canada
and
that season.
And the Swedes had the Sedins.
Yeah, and the Swedes had the Sedins.
Yeah, so Sweden was actually the favorite, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds familiar, yes. So anyways, it would be 20 years...
Yeah.
Since that time.
Time flies.
Time does fly. Is it time now for, you know, True North, the World Juniors, which have become such a huge juggernaut, even more so since 99? Time for it to come back in Winnipeg in the 2019 year?
Well, Drew, it would certainly be nice, you know, it being the 20th anniversary in 2019. But, you know, you had Gary Lawless and Darren Dreger both talking about it on the station and on TSN TV. You know, there's going to be competition, right? Edmonton's got a new arena, so Edmonton and Calgary are putting in a bid, and then so you've also got a bid coming from Ontario,
London and Windsor,
yep,
and Vancouver and Victoria.
Right, so you have four bids, right?
Yeah.
And not to say that, you know, Winnipeg doesn't have, you know, a history of international hockey and supporting international hockey, but it's definitely not going to be a slam dunk. But certainly I think that, you know, Winnipeg showed in 1999. At the time, I believe they set attendance records and revenue records, and then it's certainly been, you know, it's been 18 years now since then, so those records have since been broken, but it would certainly be excellent for not only the city of Winnipeg, but Saskatoon as well.
Sure.
The joint prairie bid there, so we'll see what happens. We're going to find out, in the coming months what's going to happen.
Let me ask you guys this, though. It sounds, by the sounds of it, that the preliminary round, you know, and this is very, 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 if the preliminary round games for Team Canada were played in Saskatoon, and then the medal rounds were played in Winnipeg, and then maybe some of the other teams' round-robin games were played in Winnipeg, but not Canada's. Would you be interested in attending a round-robin World Junior game between the Czech Republic and the U.S.?
Yeah, absolutely. Saskatoon has great hockey fans, and you'll also get people from surrounding areas in Saskatchewan, Manitoba, even Alberta attending these games. Guys, we know how many hockey fans there are in this country, right? I think regardless of what Canadian cities host this event, it's going to be well attended. I've said this before. I just like the idea of other Canadian cities hosting the event, not just Montreal and Toronto every year. Like, this year's World Juniors will be in Montreal and Toronto,
yeah,
and then Buffalo, and then we're going to see next who gets it in 2019, right?
If I recall correctly, though, when it was last held in Montreal and Toronto, I think Montreal's attendance was pretty poor.
Yeah. I think it's stale. I think I'm with Ezra. Like, it really needs to see it move around a little bit more, and just, like, you know, and again, Winnipeg does have a history of really, you know, showcasing these types of events and putting on a really good show for, you know, whether it's the Grey Cups or whether it's, you know, the Heritage Classic, of course, more recently, or just the World Juniors. Like I said, from what I remember, that was just a crazy party. Like, it was a lot of fun. Fans had a great time. It's a different atmosphere. It's a different environment, as you know what I mean? So, like, when you're there just enjoying the atmosphere, it's just a lot of fun. And again, like I said, from an organizational standpoint, you make a lot of money off of it. So, you know, they're not doing it out of the goodness of their heart. They're doing it because, you know, there's money involved. There's clearly a lot of money involved.
Sure. Huge amounts.
Huge amounts. So, I mean, like, it's an event that, you know, Canada, regardless of where you put it, I mean, Montreal, you're right, Drew, didn't. I don't think they, I think
well,
their numbers.
Because Montreal didn't host Team Canada's games, if I recall correctly. So, I mean, you know, from an audience point of view, unless Team Canada is really front and center in your city, it's not going to necessarily get the same attention. I mean, the Montreal Canadiens are number one, are the most important thing in the city of Montreal. And so if you're plugging a tournament in there and it doesn't feature Team Canada on a night-in, night-out basis, I can understand why fans in Montreal wouldn't want to pay gargantuan ticket prices to see non-Team Canada games.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the World Cup of Hockey, there were a lot of tickets available for some of the games that weren't necessarily featuring the powerhouse teams. So,
sure.
I mean, yeah, that's always a possibility, but I think that's just the reality of the circumstances, like, especially when you do split-city bids, right? That, you know, one of the cities isn't going to see Team Canada.
Is it too big, the tournament, for just one city now? If I recall correctly, they played some preliminary round games in 99 in Selkirk.
See, like, to me, you know, it's funny that they're doing Saskatoon and Winnipeg, because I think that if you were going to do a, like, almost like Grand Forks in Winnipeg, because then at least, you know, fans can transit between Winnipeg and Grand Forks.
Well, you play the U.S. games in Grand Forks and you play the Canada games in Winnipeg or something, and you're maybe doing a cross-border bid, best of both worlds, something
right,
dynamic like that.
Yeah, exactly. And again, even when the Americans come here and play, you're going to have everybody from Grand Forks and from Fargo and Minnesota, you know, coming to Winnipeg to see the Americans play. So I think it's an interesting concept, but I think there's no doubt that it'll be supported if it's here.
No doubt whatsoever that it'll be supported. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Big thank you to the guests who joined us on today's program. Joe Beninati, Washington Capitals broadcaster, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, Amanda Stein from TSN 690 in Montreal, and Michael Trakos of Post Media. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And as I said, your home for Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Big props to producer Sean, for Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Wednesday evening, if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.